Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally from our many platforms, iTunes, YouTube, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, Blueberry, Mixcloud, Listen Notes, and many more. For our recorded and podcast video casts are saved for your later on-demand listening pleasure. That sounded nice, didn't it? Including, of course, our membership website, which is caregiverscaregiver.com. And if that's too hard to remember, just try davethecaregiver.com. And we also just got a new shortcut called dave.care. There's many ways to find me. All those will get you there. And our goal here is to make sure that you survive that terrible, terrible thing called caregiver burnout. Yes, it sounds as bad as it is. And we have a very exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg, the famous Adrian Gruberg of the caregiver space, the one and only. And today we'll be interviewing our wonderful guest, author and founder of the Crisis Planner, Linda O. Fostek. And you will not want to miss this show, folks. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is for caregivers of every single kind, because there's so many kinds. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial souls. And they have this tiny little problem. They're very prone to burnout because they put all their needs first. And that's why 30% of them actually die before their loved ones do, and 60% actually become hospitalized before their loved ones do, needing a caregiver of their own. Now we can learn something from the airlines. They tell us in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. Hello, what an amazing metaphor for all of life, right? Take care of you first. Not out of selfishness, but out of survival. And we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It throws us into this grief process. Anytime we experience a loss, we go through that, whether your girlfriend just dumped you or the doctor told you had cancer, your wife just gave you divorce papers, or the CPA said you're going bankrupt, you're going to suffer grief. And there's no shortcuts. You got to go through grief. So hopefully if you feel like you're stuck and you want to move on with your life, we can help. So I want to take this time to thank my last week's guest, CJ Golden, speaking about her new book, One Petal at a Time. And just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and any of our interviews right here on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com or dave.care or Dave the Caregiver. Just an update on me, Charlene and I are on a plane tomorrow, Tuesday. Charlene and I are on a plane tomorrow. No, I don't want to say tomorrow. Just an update on me. Charlene and I are on a plane Tuesday to meet 49 national producers Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from the big shows like Dr. Oz, Good Morning America, Today, and the such, and magazines like People Magazine and nationally syndicated radio talk shows, too. So we are so excited for this journey that we're on. And then after that, I'll be speaking at NASDAQ the following Monday, and afterwards, our picture will be on the Jumbotron in Times Square. Adrian, if you're in the neighborhood, you should stop by. It's only going to be up there for 22 seconds, so you just long enough to get a picture and a video and act like a fool. But enough of me.
When it is?
I will let you know the exact time.
Please.
So a big welcome to my guest, Linda Fostek. Welcome to the show, Linda. I'm so excited to have you on.
I'm
about
so
you.
happy to be here, Dave, and I'm really excited to be here with you and Adrian today.
Cool, and you live on the East Coast too, don't you?
Yes, I'm on Long Island, not too far from where you're going to be on that jumbotron.
How long does it take you to get to Times Square?
Oh, well, with no traffic, an hour. With traffic, could be three.
Really? Well, we may not be worth 3 hours travel, but we might be worth an hour. I don't know. Well, why don't you take a minute and introduce yourself? I like to ask my guests just who is Linda Fostek and why were you put on God's green earth?
Well, I'm Linda Fostek, and I'm the crisis planner. And I became the crisis planner quite, it really kind of surprised me. I actually was at an event. Kevin Harrington was speaking. Someone asked him how he chose what products he put his name on, which is as seen on TV, his brand. And he said, if he sees something that fills a need, he feels compelled to bring it to the marketplace. And at that moment, I thought of something that my father had started 23 years earlier, which was a result of seeing so many of his friends losing a spouse. So that is where the crisis planner really began. And I've been on this incredible journey, helping people cope with disaster, prepare for disaster before it happens, and unfortunately, dealing with a lot of personal disasters in my own family as well. I was my husband's caregiver. I was a caregiver for my mother who just passed from Alzheimer's. So I'm very familiar with the stress and strain that caregiving can put on a person.
Awesome. Well, these are her books, and she probably has more than these. I don't know. I'm not going to mention that title's name.
Tell me which came first?
Well, that's,
Blank
you know.
happens or what next?
Well, you know, it's really funny. I was writing the first, which was Shit Happens. And that when I was writing in the middle of it, and I had a workshop that I was going to be attending, and I needed something to sell. And they said, you need something you can sell for 10 bucks. And I didn't have any products because the business was brand new. I was just writing my first book. I didn't know it. And suddenly it came to me that what everybody needed was a workbook that would help them organize all of their information in one place. And so I put together, and now what? So that actually was the very first thing I published. And it certainly
Okay.
wasn't as pretty as this. I mean, I printed it in my basement, collated it, and stapled it over a weekend, and went to the workshop and sold almost $400 worth of books. You know, so I think I knew I was onto something, and this has really been the
Hey.
workhorse. So Dave's back.
And
Yes,
we
Dave
do
is
need
back.
that.
Okay,
So,
so tell us what is the worry go round? I like to use that term.
you like that, huh? The merry-go-round
I
is
do.
what most of
Yeah.
us live on. I mean, we would prefer our life to be more like a merry-go-round, have music, the horses going up and down, watching the world going
Sure.
around. But what do? We worry about all the what ifs, the things that could go wrong, and we worry about things we can control. We worry about things we can't control. And you know, my husband was a tremendous worrywart, and I used to tell him, "Well, can you change it? Can you do anything about it?" And if he said no, I said, "Then don't waste your energy worrying about it because there's nothing you can do. If you can do something about it, well, then do it." And then you stop worrying. So I get people off the worry-go-round because I really encourage them and guide them through taking the action that they need to be prepared for the things that they can prepare for in anticipation of something going wrong. And we know it's not a matter of if something's going to go wrong, it's about when it's going to happen.
When?
Yeah, Murphy's Law.
Exactly. And there's tremendous peace of mind and knowing that you have everything covered and you've thought of all these things. But what happens is most of us don't know what we don't know. And that's where I
Then
come
what
in.
does it mean? What does it mean to be master of your own disaster? That almost sounds like a negative thing, doesn't it?
Well, you want to be a master of disaster because what is the worst thing that happens in a disaster? You panic.
You're out of control.
There's chaos. You get, and when you're in that mode, when you are in chaos, when you are in a panic mode, you have less options available. Because when you're in the middle of a crisis, you have less options available. And we unfortunately make bad decisions. A classic example of that is I had a niece who had a kitchen fire. Her she was heating oil on the stove and it burst into flames. Now, we're all taught that what puts fire out is you take the oxygen away. You put the cover on the pot and it goes out. Instead, she totally panicked. Picked up the pot, ran out the door, down the hall of her apartment building. She could have burned the entire apartment building down. Ended up with second-degree burns on her arms. And afterwards, she said, Linda, Aunt Linda, I was so stupid. I can't believe that I didn't just put the cover back on the pot.
So it's like disaster is going to happen. Sometimes it's not going to go away. So instead of being a victim of disaster, be a master of disasters. Have I got it?
Exactly.
Why didn't I think of that?
Well, and that's exactly what you're doing. And Dave, what you're doing by educating caregivers that they do not have to be victims. They can be the loving caregivers they want to be for their loved ones and not be resentful if they access the resources that are available to them. And many of them don't know what resources are available, and that's really – where part of the problem is, and that's where we come in, right? Yeah, because we bring them the resources they need so they can take care of themselves. And when you take care of yourself, you take care of yourself, you can be a much better caregiver for the person that you're taking care of. And
so what is the crisis planner? Did you go over that yet?
No, the crisis planner is a whole system that systematically takes you through 8 modules of planning, 8 different areas of planning that you should really have in place. They include things like legal planning, your financial planning, insurance planning of all kinds, from health to property to, you know.
Is that this or is that the one I don't have?
No, you have the other one. It's in both.
So this is it.
This organizes it. The Anowit book organizes everything. You put all your account numbers in, your contact people in, you put the documents that, you know, the insurance documents or the legal documents with this book. You keep everything together, and then you tell somebody where to find it, because that's the second most important thing. The first important thing is to do it, put it together, but your family needs to know where it is.
Awesome.
They don't need to know necessarily everything that's in it, but there's certain important things that they do need to know, like where the healthcare policy is, or where your long-term insurance policy is, or that you even have one.
And the best time to do this is after tragedy strikes, or now when things are normal?
Now when things are normal. Because it's all about...
How do you even ask that question, Dave?
It was a trick question.
It's planning
rhetorical.
For a crisis.
You know, I don't want you to think that the crisis will happen, but I do want you to be prepared to know what to do when it does.
Yeah, and, I had to set you up. Yeah.
And truly, we never know. I mean, I've worked with people in their 20s and 30s, and I've worked with people in their 80s and 90s. And, you know, and they have the same types of problems when they're not prepared. In fact, some of the younger people have even more significant problems than the older because they have everything online. And if they don't have a list of every password and login and know, you know, I mean, I had a young man who lost his wife at 35. He did all the financial stuff online. He didn't even have the password to the computer, didn't know what bank they used, and had no idea what bills needed to be paid because everything came in online. You know, and there's ways you can work with that. If one spouse is is very computer literate and the other one is not, you just get paper bills. You know, you get paper copies so that the person who isn't on the computer would be able to take care of it if they had to.
That's a great idea.
Some of these things are so simple and yet like, oh, I do everything online. I don't need the paper. But maybe your loved one does.
So you became the crisis planner through personal experience. Something happened, right?
Yeah, that. And also I came from a family of planners. My father really was the genesis of this whole thing. I mean, every vacation was like an expedition, you know. It was like we're driving 15 miles and we're going to stay here and we're going to spend this much time at this national park.
Like that movie, Vacation, with Chevy Chase.
But it taught me to look at things logically. And he was always solution oriented. He was creating solutions to problems up until he was 90 years old when he passed.
Wow. So you got his genes.
Yeah, I definitely did.
Is that a curse or a blessing, by the way?
I think it's a blessing because he was a really special man. And, you know, I know that I am on the right path because the day I received the first copy of the Shit Happens book would have been his 92nd birthday. So he was sending me a message that I was doing the right things. And, so you know, I chose that title for a really good reason, because I needed people to be shaken up by it. Because they're going to pick that book up and say, what is this about? You know, so that's why I chose that title. I mean, I know it offends some people and some people think it's great. It's definitely a conversation starter. And I've had everything happen to me from being censored at the library to having to sell it from under the table at Barnes & Noble. They let me display the Endowment book. And by the way, this is the book that goes with that. And I was like, you want to buy a watch? You know, it was like so funny. you have to keep your sense of humor, because if you're going to create a stir, I mean, you're stirring things up by really bringing attention to the role that caregivers have and how vulnerable caregivers are, because they don't realize what they're giving of themselves, how much they're giving, until they themselves get sick.
So you're not the person who has a little plaque on your desk that says a clean, unorganized desk is a sign of a sick mind, right?
Actually, my desk isn't that neat, but I know where everything is. I have all my stuff.
Oh, file by the pile. Okay. I actually had to pay an organizer to come in and fix the stuff that I just kept moving from place to place and place because everything should have its place, right? And I was just out of control, right?
But, you know, so, one of the things that happens as a caregiver is you have to prioritize. And something just isn't that important. You know, and you choose the things that are most important to spend time on. So
that's true. You know, and everything else just falls off the desk.
Yeah. But you can't beat yourself up because the house isn't perfectly clean or the laundry isn't folded yet. And unfortunately, people make themselves crazy over those silly things. And yeah, there were times when my sink was full of dishes and I really needed to vacuum, but it was more important to me to spend the time that I had with my husband with him and sharing the laughter.
That's a good point.
And so
that is a very good point. Listen, it's a great time for a break. Let's take a break real quick. Hold that thought and we'll come back and talk more about that. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg and Linda Fostek. So what did I interrupt you? What were you saying, Linda?
I'm not sure. Where were we?
Okay. I forget some people have the same problem I have. They just can't remember where they left off. Well, let's talk about what was your experience as a caregiver for your husband. I think you probably started to go into that.
Yeah. You know, my husband was the sweetest man ever. I mean, he was my gentle giant. He was 6'8", and he really was a big boy. He made me feel petite.
Wow,
at my
6'8".
At 5'9", I felt petite standing next to him, which was the first time ever in my life. But he suffered from a number of things. I mean, he'd had 7 back surgeries. He had diabetes. Ultimately, he had kidney failure. He was on dialysis for 3.5 years. The last 6 months, we were doing home hemodialysis together. And it was actually the best he felt in the entire time he was on dialysis, because it's gentler and it's not as exhausting as in-center dialysis is. And he was actually getting his life back together. He was writing a cookbook for people with kidney disease and diabetes.
Wow.
He was really feeling the best he had in a long time. And we took those 3.5 hours of doing dialysis and the time we spent together, which was really nice, because we laughed and we shared and we talked about all kinds of things. You know, it was really a wonderful time. And he got sick and was given an antibiotic, an IV antibiotic. And unfortunately, he had a horrific adverse drug event from that antibiotic. And the last 3 years of his life were pure misery. I mean, he had a Stevens-Johnson syndrome reaction, which caused all the skin to blister off of his legs and feet, and his toenails fell off, and it was like open wounds that just for 3 months. And ultimately, he ended up with secondary infections, and, you know, just they wanted to amputate his leg, and he was like, that's it, I'm done.
My God.
But the magical thing when you are
like Job.
When you're in a situation with somebody whose health is failing like that, and you're their caregiver and you love them so much, you grieve the loss of each function as they lose it. And you grieve that together. So it's like half the grief, you know, because together you're grieving each piece. And when they finally are freed from their pain and suffering, as my husband was last May, you're both freed. And I made sure during that time that because I knew, as his caregiver, that one of my responsibilities is I was going to have to take care of myself when he was no longer there. And I didn't expect him to go, you know, I didn't expect him to go when he went, but I knew I would most likely outlive him. So I made sure that I took time to continue to work on my business. I would go to networking events and spend, you know, the 3 hours, you know, between travel time or whatever, and I would just focus on what I was doing with my business, so that when I came home, I was loving and caring and really enjoyed the time that we had together, as opposed to being resentful, which happens when you don't take care of yourself. And I didn't bring what was going on at home with me to the business meetings. So most people had no clue what was going on, but I needed that separation. And really, since his passing, I've been able to move forward with my life fairly quickly. And it's very different with the sudden loss. I mean, anybody who's been a caregiver for a long time knows there's a certain level of peace when that person finally does leave you.
You know, Adrian, I'm going to introduce Linda to this woman because I think she could really help. She's going through a rough time right now, just the transition.
Yes, she is.
She's gutting the apartment, you know, changing rooms and and the storage.
And she is someone who knew. She is someone who knew that this was going to happen. She
yeah,
was
and
prepared.
You're never ready for it. Whenever
as much as she could be prepared, you're never ready for it. It's
never
always different.
And nobody can tell you how to grieve. Everybody's
right.
expressing their grief in a unique way yeah. that's comfortable to them. But at the same time, there's a certain point where you have to let go of the pain and start living again, because that your loved one wouldn't want you to stop living. You know, yeah.
Linda, we're talking about a different Linda that we'll right. introduce okay. you to after the show. Now, you say in your book, 5 mistakes to avoid after your loved one passes. And some of these are a little confusing to me, because even though I'm the caregiver's caregiver, so I'm learning a lot here. Number one, do not turn off the phone. What does that mean?
Well, you know.
Oh, please.
You want to make sure that the phone calls still come in, because you're going to have communications maybe from investments that you didn't know about that will be calling. There's going to be phone calls coming into that number that you really need to keep that phone active. And some people are like,
so you're talking about like his cell phone. You're talking about
like his cell phone, or even
for example,
or an elderly person that only has a house phone. You can you can forward that number to your own number so that the calls still come in, because there may be things that you have no idea about. You know,
I never would have thought of that. Would you have thought of that, Adrian?
Yes.
Well, she's smarter than me, of course. How about number two?
Oh, my late husband was smarter.
Yeah. I guess you've been through what I haven't been through yet. Yeah. Number two, do not close all credit cards.
Right. You want to keep at least a primary credit card open, because there may be bills that you still have to pay.
His
so you
bills.
Want to, you know, whether you're paying for the funeral,
yeah.
if you haven't already prepaid it, you have to keep a card open. Just keep it open for a little while. You don't have to keep it open forever, but, you know, some people
and
like
number three.
Yeah.
Do not call everybody immediately.
Well, you want to call immediate family, but you're not going to spend hours on the phone calling everybody you know and telling them that so-and-so passed until you have all the arrangements finalized. And then you can set up a phone chain and have people let them know where the funeral is going to be, what the time is going to be, you know, because you're doing double work.
Facebook works too, right?
You got to be careful with Facebook. You know, as we've all learned, our expectation of privacy on Facebook, you shouldn't have one.
And, so don't say it if you don't want it in the newspapers.
Right. And the same, you know, Facebook and posting obituaries. I have actually known.
That's where we come to number four, avoid posting an obituary in social media.
And the reason for that is there are scammers and there are thieves that read those papers, and when they see, oh, the funeral is going to be here, they rob your house while you're at the funeral, and that's a double whammy.
Right.
Then you've been, not only have you had loss, but now your personal privacy has been invaded. You've been violated in another way. So after the fact, it's sort of like when I travel, I never tell people I'm going somewhere, and when I come back, I post the pictures of where I was. I don't post them while I'm away. You know,
you
it's just
what,
a little security thing.
Yeah, that's smart. Do you remember what number five is?
Yes, it's about not making the life, you know, any major life decisions. And really, the reason for that is how often, you know, like one parent dies, the children swoop in from all over the country. And they say, oh, well, mom can't be alone. So they pick her up, they move her out, and 6 months later, she's sitting in some little apartment or in some place, and she's like, what happened? This wasn't my plan. Nobody asked me. And, you know, so you have to let people have a little time to process, you know, whether they, you know, if they want to sell the house, think about it for a while. If they want to move to Florida or whatever, think about it for a while. Don't dive into things when you're in crisis mode. You're likely to make bad decisions. You'll settle for any price for the house instead of getting the price you should get.
My brother-in-law died just a little over a year ago, and my sister still, is just kind of waiting because she's still not sure about, do I keep the house? Do I sell the house? And so she's taking that advice.
Yeah, it's important. And in any crisis, they say you shouldn't make, if you go to a workshop that's like one of those out-of-body mind experiences, and they always will tell you, don't make any major decisions for a week. Break up with, don't get a divorce, don't break up with your boyfriend or girlfriend.
Don't get married.
things like that, because you have to have time to process. And, when you're in the first earliest stages of grief, you're not capable of really thinking logically.
Right.
Because you need that comfort and nurturing, and you need people around you. And fortunately, for most of us, that happened. But if it doesn't, you have to reach out to people and say, I need help.
Adrian, how many of these did you do and not do of those five?
I was pretty savvy. I was getting advice from people who'd been there and done that, and also from my husband, who, as I said, he was pretty smart when it came to make sure you have this. We organized things together, a lot
made a
together.
List.
He also made it very clear that if I needed help, I should ask for it, and not to let myself become so overwhelmed with things that, if I should hire a professional if I needed a professional. I shouldn't try and do it myself. That I would just get bogged down, and then things would stop moving forward, and I let myself take time. I still haven't decided whether or not to sell the apartment. It's 7 years. I'm not ready yet. So,
well, it's a nice apartment.
You haven't been here.
in Manhattan's got to be nice.
Not really, but.
I'm gonna see it though. So you have to clean up the place so I can come see it.
Oh, it's in a state of construction right now. So
you're doing the kitchen.
I can only do so much.
Yeah. All right. So, Linda, what things should the caregiver pay particular attention to in crisis planning? This is done.
Well, the number one thing the caregiver needs to understand is how are they going to take care of themselves afterwards? Because if they're worried that they're not going to be able to survive, they are not going to be able to cope with the loss because it'll be just so overwhelming. So pay attention to the financials. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to what your income and outgo is. Have an idea what it costs you to stay where you are, whether you need to consider going somewhere else. I think that is probably one of the most stressful things for anybody who loses somebody, or even for a caregiver who's got all these expenses. The other thing they need to pay attention to is to identify the resources that are there to help them. Here in the state of New York, and two other states, I think Connecticut and maybe Maryland, I'm not sure about the third one. I know Connecticut and New York have it. It's called Community Medicaid, and it's a in-home care option that doesn't have a 5-year look back for Medicaid. So you can have in-home help without having to have no resources. So you don't have to sign your house over, or you don't have to do any of that. And then I know in my mother's case, she had a long-term care policy. It was a five-year policy. So as soon as you activate your long-term care policy, set up your Medicaid trust so that when the long-term care money runs out, you've already had your five-year look back. So everything is it's protected. So there's a lot of things that the caregiver needs to be conscious of and really step back from that caregiving role long enough to say, I got to be here afterwards, or I intend to be here afterwards, and what's my life going to look like?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say, that Steve was very insistent that I be aware of the kinds of things that I was going to need to be aware of to take care of myself once he was gone. We weren't deluding each other. It wasn't like, oh yeah, you're going to be fine. We knew that he was going to pass, and that we also grieved together that way.
Yeah.
He grieved that he wouldn't be here with me, and of course I grieved the same thing that he wouldn't be here with me. But he made sure that I was equipped to take care of myself, and I had early on found whatever support there was on the internet for online support groups, because as a caregiver, I couldn't do it off premises. I had to do it here, and there's a lot more available now than there was in 2005. So
right.
There's a big difference, and what the people like the three of us have been doing is bringing that to people's awareness in the forefront.
Exactly.
The name of the game is reduce the stress, because stress is the killer. Stress is the thing that gives us ulcers and gives us cancer and stuff like that. So what are the biggest things just to keep the stress level manageable, Linda?
Well, by being prepared, you can reduce the stress, because the what ifs, you know what's going to happen. You know that you're going to be okay financially. You know that, okay, in the event that this happens, this is where I have to go, or this is the next step. I mean, have conversations with the doctor. Be the advocate with the doctor. Don't allow yourself to be victimized by a medical system that sets it up that the doctors see the patients at 7 in the morning and the patient is sick, and the doctor was here, but they say, I have no clue. Because they don't have a clue what the doctor said. And the doctor comes deliberately at that time because there's nobody else there.
Yeah.
And as a caregiver, you're trying to get information. So I work with a woman who has a nonprofit called Pulse, which is a patient safety and advocacy group, where she teaches people how to interact with the medical staff in the hospitals to make sure that they're doing all the things that they're supposed to be doing, like washing their hands between patients and cleaning the bathroom with different parts of the bathroom with different rags. Don't clean the sink with the same rag you clean the toilet with. She sits on the Joint Commission, so she's very much involved in patient safety, and she's really teaching people to ask for their life. And if you don't ask, you don't get or understand. And one of the other things that happens too often is every time you go to the doctor, they give you another medication and another medication. And each medication has three side effects. And then you end up with four medications. And unfortunately, the number four cause of death in this country is adverse drug events. And that's how I lost my husband, with an adverse drug event. And I found something recently that I think everybody really should investigate. There is a specific DNA test for medications that will tell you if a medication is going to work, whether it's going to not work for you, whether it's going to harm you, whether it's going to interact with other things, or whether you're going to have an adverse event to it. It's an amazing thing, and I'm working with a company that's doing that now because I have a story that's real.
That's a great thing to know about.
Listen, we're going to take another break, so hold that thought, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. Release his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through, because he is one. And he now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his incredible caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. We'll help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life, and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today, or buy one for your special caregiver. On sale everywhere, and at caregiverscaregiver.com. Tech Girl, what's the one thing that you wish you could have known that would have changed the outcome for your husband? But did you have any liability, legal liability? Did you have a? Because with my wife, you know, there was one of the neurologists was a little too conservative, and there was a lawsuit that could have been filed. Unfortunately, none of his colleagues would testify against him, so they kind of stick together, you know. So
I went through a similar thing in that there were many medical mistakes made, especially in this last situation, that they really should have been far more aggressive in the treatment of the Steven Johnson syndrome. He should have been treated like a burn victim, and should have been put in a hyperbaric chamber to help heal. Unfortunately, they just left everything uncovered, weeping and dripping, and me trying to wrap it so to try to keep it as clean as possible. But, you know, but that aside, the legal community basically said, while there was definitely things that were not done properly because of his extensive health issues prior to this event, it would have been very difficult to measure what was cause and effect, kind of. So I spoke with two different attorneys that said no. But the thing that I really wish I had known was truly about that DNA testing, because that, as it turned out after the fact, I found out that his twin sister is also allergic to the same medication, and his mother was allergic to it. So it was definitely a genetic component, and it would have definitely shown up. And they would not have given him the medication if this test had been available before it happened. So, you know, that's the one thing I wish to impart to others, that this is something that can save lives and change lives dramatically better.
Are you at liberty to tell us where to go for that test?
Well, the way that it works is literally you, if somebody wants to email me, I will send them a letter that they can take to their doctor requesting that the test be done. It's covered by Medicare and all insurances, so there's no out-of-pocket expense for the patient. And the doctor then gets the test kits, which are just a cheek swab, DNA, that has to go to a specific laboratory that's all HIPAA protected. It's a medical laboratory. It's not like Ancestry or one of those that knows what your privacy is there. But this is a medical laboratory, and the doctor will then get anywhere from an 18-page to, I've seen, 52-page reports on your specific DNA and medications. It's really
amazing.
It is amazing. And hospitals like St. Jude's and the Mayo Clinic and Vanderbilt are requiring every patient to have that test done before they even see them. So it's obviously got some huge benefits for patient outcomes. And certainly, even just think about the limiting the liability for the doctors, reducing their reducing the patient's cost of buying medications that they don't need.
Mm-hmm.
It even tells the doctor whether they should adjust the dosing and whether certain medications, what usually happens is they reduce the number of medications that people are on and adjust dosing and just overall get much better outcomes. So I, you know,
is the test covered by insurance?
Yes, it is. Medicare covers it, and major insurance companies are covering it. And as long as your insurance company covers even $1 of the test, there's no cost to the patient.
Mm.
That's cool.
Are you on Medicare?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you didn't look old enough. I've got 8 more months.
I've been there for 2 years.
Just a baby in the cradle.
I don't want to tell you how long I've been there.
It's a blessing, believe me.
So, what tips would you give to others as caregivers to make the journey easier for both the loved one and the caregiver? If you haven't already gone over that big tip.
Well, you know, for me, when it gets to the point where you can't deal with it, you have to step away. Whether you go for a walk, get a massage, do something for yourself. Because it can be overwhelming. It's so easy for it to be overwhelming. And I know in the end, my husband was having panic attacks when I was away. And, you know, he'd send a text where, you know, I tell him what time I'd be home, but I'd get a text. Where are you? 2 minutes later. Why aren't you answering? And this was my time. I needed to carve this time out. And by the time I would get home, he'd be in such a panic state. And then as soon as I walked through the door, he'd calm down. But it part of that was his own anxiety and recognizing that it's not you, it's what they're going through. And you have to also protect yourself. So as a caregiver, even if you go in the bathroom and scream obscenities at the mirror, do what you got to do to get yourself back centered. Because you know, the caregiver, the person you're caring for is not giving you a hard time. They are having a hard time. And, you know, when you put that perspective to it, they're having a hard time, and they mm-hmm. want help. They want you to be there to help them. And sometimes they don't, you know, my mom with Alzheimer's, she couldn't express pain normally. You know, when she was in pain, if somebody was trying to move her or lift her, and she would bite and kick you, you know, it would be like, where did that come from? But the way they express pain or the way they express themselves is not the same as it had always been. So, you know, I just creating that safe place where you can find that little corner of the world that you can, that, you know, you can let it all hang out. Find somebody that you can talk to. Have somebody that you can vent to when you need to. Everybody needs to vent. I mean, we like to think that we keep it, but you can't keep it in. You have to let it out. And that helped me survive. I had, you know, a couple of people I could actually talk to that I was like, I can't deal with this anymore. No, but, you know, and you pull yourself together and, you know, you brush yourself off and you say, okay, next. And find
you pick yourself up, out. You brush yourself off, and start all over again. So what resources do you offer to help the caregivers cope?
Okay, so the resources I have are the books, obviously, and this is probably the most important resource, the Now What book, because this is where you put everything down in one place. It gives you a list of all the documents you need to put together. It has budgeting, you know, income and outgo information in there. It talks about taking care of things like your funeral planning and taking care of disabled loved ones and who's going to take care of your pets. You know, you can't assume that people are going to want that dog that you love so much. And you wouldn't want that dog you love so much to found someplace. And then the whole list of documents that you need to put with it, everything from, you know, your military discharge papers, you know, which will allow the person to have military honors when they're buried and a flag on their coffin. You know, I mean, things like that people scurry around trying to find because, oh, my God, I wanted my dad to have taps played, you know, and have the military honors because he was a World War II veteran. Where are those papers? You know, so when you have them in advance, it just makes it so much easier. And then knowing the steps of what you need to do, this will take you step by step through, you know, when somebody does pass away. And then it also talks about the healing process after. And probably the last page of this book is probably the most important one to me. Because when you talk about the after, it's like who you are is not defined by whose child you were or who you were married to. You have special, unique gifts to discover and share with the world. But when you ask yourself, and now what? You might just be surprised at the answer. So it ends on a very hopeful note because as a caregiver, our lives do go on. And we are responsible for where we go from here. And, you know, Adrian, you've taken your loss and you've created a community of support for people that are dealing with caregiving and loss. And they're not alone. I've created the Crisis Planner out of my journey. Dave,
right.
You created the Caregiver's Caregiver from your journey. You know, it's how
right.
we give back that makes a difference.
And
wow.
I think we're very much aware that the after and the now what part of it is a big part of caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to minimize that.
So
well, how can people contact you? How can they get a hold of these books?
Okay, well,
besides Barnes and Noble and because they got them hidden
on
under
Amazon.
The counter.
They're on Amazon. They can go to my website, which is crisisplanner.com, and get them. They can also download a free checklist for their ICE file, which is your in case of emergency file. So it'll give you a list of all the documents put together.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about the importance of having three sets of those documents because you want to have one in your home, you want to have one in a safe deposit box, and you want to have a set stored in a store vault in the cloud.
Mm.
Because, giant bug just landed on me. Yuck! okay, I don't know where it came from. Okay.
So your book will not protect you from bugs. Okay, I'll make a note of that.
Write that down.
It just surprised me. but, you know, truly, that checklist is really important. There's also a disaster planning checklist, which can be used for anything like a hurricane coming or whatever, things together to be prepared for that. So that if you are required
evacuation
to leave on a moment's notice, you can. Certainly in California, that was something that many people had to do last fall with the fire season, and then again with the mudslide season.
and the earthquake that's coming.
being in New
late.
York.
We have the
being in New York, my California relatives have set me up as their emergency go-to number, and I'm prepared for their earthquake.
Remember in New York, they used to have blackouts very frequently. I don't know what Con Edison did to fix that, but you haven't had one in a long time, have you?
Not really.
No.
We've been pretty good with that. But,
you've been around since when the last one happened, the last big one, right? You guys were alive, right?
Oh, yeah. That
all
was
right. So is your website the or just caregiver?
TheCrisisPlanner.com.
TheCrisisPlanner.com.
Email me at Linda Fostek, that's Fostek, at TheCrisisPlanner.com. So if they want more information on the DNA testing, they should send me an email and I will respond with the information that they need to bring to their doctor.
Awesome.
And, I think that what all of us are doing is we all share a mission together. That's so important, really.
Yeah. Adrian, how do we get a hold of you to find out more about your wonderful caregiver space?
It's Adrian, ADRIENNE, at the caregiver space caregiverspace.org, and it's the website's thecaregiverspace.org, and all the links to all the social media pages are there.
Awesome. Thank you again, guys. And thank you to my audience for tuning in every Wednesday at noon. We just did the show a little early because I'm going to be on a plane when we're normally speaking on my way to visit Adrian. And so until next time, well, the next two shows will probably be aired from New York. So maybe I'll have a nice view outside my window and I can have that in the background. So bye-bye. Such an optimist,
thank
yes.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you,
Adrian.
Bye.
Bye-bye. See you soon.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.